You'll know that a little while ago, a gentleman asked exactly the question that we're going to address, which is, what does a lady do in the forestry industry? Seems like a kind of macho job. Our image of loggers and forest rangers and sawmill folks is usually of men, but that isn't true anymore. And the people who I've got here to talk to you for the next half hour or so will tell you all about what they do. Starting on my right, we have Nancy Pywell, who is a professor, teaches in the forestry department and wears a snazzy hat, teaches in forestry at the University of Florida. Next, we have Lugene Baxley, who runs a logging business. She works with her sons and daughter, but she'll tell you all about that whole process and a lot of work that she's done. And then I'll reintroduce, for those of you who may have just come in, down on the right, Barbara Dye, who is the plant manager for the Corbett Cypress Mill that's just a little bit north of here, about 9 miles north of this place. Let's start with Lugene, since we just got here. Did I do that yesterday, too? Now, tell us about how you got into running the business, but also tell us about what you did before you were the chief of everything, because you've worked really hard.
Well, I think I've done a little bit of all of it. My husband, like I said yesterday, has always been sick, and I more or less had to go with him every day to the woods, and then I just got to where I liked it, and I could do most anything that he could do out there, plus run the crews. A lot of times he was in the hospital, and I would run them 6 to 8 weeks at a time, and run parts, take care of 6 children, get the crew off to work, go and see that everything was running, and come back, run to the hospital to see him, go back to the woods, and then run parts that night when they come in. We'd work on everything that was broke down, 2 or 3 men that worked with me. And I guess I done that for about 33 years before we lost him. And then I have 2 sons, grown sons, and after he passed away, the 2 boys took over and started running it. And I'm just semi-retired and sit back and see that they do what they're supposed to.
A mother's job is never done.
No.
Barbara, you've been talking already, but we'll call on you again to talk about what happens at your plant and then what your particular role in it is.
Well, the reason why I got into wood, forest industry, whatever you want to call it, but it was just a practical joke. That's how it started out, you know. Some guys, you know, you got to prove yourself to a guy regardless. They was making a crack joke that I couldn't use a chainsaw, so I showed them I could. And then I kind of liked it, and I kept on, and I wind up knowing everything about, well, I ain't going to say know everything about wood, but I know enough to get me where I am today. And so that's one reason I picked wood to be my career. But my main job is out there to make sure the shipping, handling, and everybody else do their job correctly.
So you have to know how to do every one of them?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
Have you done each one of those?
I do it every day, yeah.
Every day. Nancy, tell us about how you got into the fix you're in now. How did you get where you are now?
Well, I don't consider it a fix because I love my job. I really do. I started out with a degree in education and spent a couple of years teaching elementary school and decided that despite the fact that there are wonderful children in the world like these 2 sitting in the front row, I wasn't cut out to spend the rest of my days in a classroom. And so I went back to graduate school and ended up with an assistantship interpreting aerial photographs for a land use mapping project in Massachusetts, and the courses that I was taking seemed to go more and more towards the forestry area. I really enjoyed them. I enjoyed the professionals that I was working with. I enjoyed, at least upon occasion, getting out into the field and working with natural resources, and so I ended up getting a doctorate in forestry and resource planning and now work at the University of Florida with the Cooperative Extension Service, helping to help other people learn about trees and forest resources in Florida. And it's an awful lot of fun.
What proportion are your students? Do you have, how many men to women do you find in your classrooms now?
It varies from year to year. in forestry schools throughout the country, but there is an ever-increasing number of women in forestry. In fact, there is a journal now called, well, it was called Women in Forestry, now it's called Women in Natural Resources. We had a copy of this at our library up at Penn State, and one of the fellows who wasn't so thrilled at having women in his classes had written on it, "Women do not belong in forestry." And it's kind of too bad, because there are a lot of us out there doing our jobs and working hard and trying to prove that we can do it, and I think we've done an admirable job of proving that we can do it.
Barbara, I know you've had a few challenges to your authority. Will you tell them about that?
And then there are women drivers.
Oh, Nancy.
I didn't say that. Honest.
Yeah, the guys did a practical joke on me one time. At lunchtime, we always go down.
Go kart. Woo, woo.
A slight distraction here. When the woman's out, maybe we can get the story going again.
Watch. Oh, wait, there comes a car.
We don't need to amuse you. But Barbara does have a real good story.
If you think that was funny, wait till you hear Barbara's story.
When I first started working at the Corpus Disciples, you know, I had to prove a point, like I said, about the chainsaw. And I still haven't proved to the guys that I want to be one of them, you know, work that side with them. So one day at lunchtime, we was all sitting up there eating lunch, and you know, we wear boots to work. And I took off my boots to lay down on the bench, you know, to take me a nap. They won't let them know I was gave out the first day, you know, just chilling out there. And they all got some glue and put in my boots. When it's time to go back to work, I slipped my boots on and everything. It was feeling kind of funny. I tried to take my boots off. Couldn't even get my boots off. It took me a while to get them boots off. But I didn't let that get me down either. I just kept on working with them, pat them on the back. You know, if one of them get in trouble, try to pick up a log, they couldn't do it. I go over there and give them a hand. They look at me like, you know, wow. So now I'm one of the guys that we all hang out together. We get along pretty good, and we still got one male chauvinist out there. I get him one day.
Lou Jean, have you ever had problems when you took over the business working with men, getting them to work for you or buy your products or anything?
I haven't had any problems. I had a couple of timber men that thought they was going to run over me once when Mr. Baxter was in the hospital. He was going to move my crew in on a piece of timber that was real wet, and he knew I couldn't make any progress at it or anything. So one of the work hands called me and he said, "Miss Baxter," he said, "we have got to either come home or move to another woods." And I said, "Where did he say move you to?" And he said, "Well, over there where Mr. Baxter said not go." And I said, "Just stay where you're at and let me call Mr. Baxter at the hospital." And I called him. He said, "No, you're not moving nowhere." He says, "Take the crew home." And so in a few minutes, Mr. Jackson called me. And he said, "Miss Baxter, your crew has already moved so-and-so." I said, "No, my crew's standing right here with me." And I said, "I'll move them home before I'll move in that woods till Mr. Baxley gets back." And he didn't like that at all. But he thought he was going to kind of shove me around, but it didn't work. So I had better timber from then on to cut in all the time.
They decided they had to respect you.
Uh-huh.
Nancy, what's happened with you, with your teaching? Do you have problems with the guys in your classes, or...?
Well, I don't actually do classroom teaching, and fortunately, the young men that I have an opportunity to work with, serving as the advisor to the student chapter of Society of American Foresters and working with a lot of the students, I don't have a problem at this point. I think the young men know that I'm a valuable resource for them, that I know things about how to teach and communicate that other of their faculty members may not be interested or involved in, so that's not a problem. But it's been interesting working at different universities. My first job at a university was at the University of Massachusetts, and I was the first woman on the faculty there in the forestry department. And I had an advantage because I'd been to graduate school there and I knew a lot of the faculty. They knew me and knew my work and respected me, so that wasn't a problem. But when I moved to Penn State University at the School of Forest Resources there, there were a lot of people who weren't glad to see me. And I was consciously excluded by a few of them from social events that were going on when the gang would go out after work on Friday afternoon for beer. But eventually, I just kept on doing my job as best I could, and eventually one of them pointed out to me that every Friday afternoon we all go down to the train station, why don't you come on down with us? And after that, it was a whole lot easier.
What happens on Friday afternoons at your place, Barbara?
Well, nothing really.
You were nodding your head about something.
It's time to go home and go to bed then.
Mm. Well, no, not really. Just like she said, you know, once you prove yourself to the guys that you can do what they can do, then they treat you like one of the guys. You go out and have a beer with them, go out and tell one of them sorry jokes they usually tell, and then they go their way, you go your way, and then go home just like you did something pretty good. So you make yourself feel good.
Some of it's proving yourself to them, and some of it's proving yourself to yourself. Because when I first got into the job at Massachusetts, I realized that I hadn't taken some of the field courses and hadn't done a lot of field work. So I talked to the fellow who ran the forest at the university. I said, you know, I've never cut down a tree any bigger than that, and that was with a hatchet. Could you take me out? Would you take me out into the university forest to cut down a decent-sized tree so I could feel when I'm talking chainsaw safety at meetings or at classes that I know what I'm talking about? Chainsaws are phenomenally macho, and my ex-husband told me that he didn't ever want me to use a chainsaw, and I know that he had a good reason for that. We had a son, and he didn't want me to get hurt and not be able to take care of him, and that's fine. He had a good, valid reason. But after we were divorced, I went and got a chainsaw. I went and cut down a tree about yay big around, and it felt very good to, A, have cut down a tree that somebody needed to use for something because it was going to the sawmill and somebody needed the wood. So I wasn't just doing it to prove myself. But the fellow instructed me and gave me the safety instructions and told me the safety equipment to wear, and I cut down this humongous tree all by myself and then cut the branches off it and bucked it up, and it felt really good, like I had really accomplished something. And now I knew when I was doing workshops for people, I could say with confidence what you should do and what you shouldn't do, and I feel better about myself, and that was proving to myself, not to somebody else. I bet you had to prove a lot to yourself, too.
Yeah, I was just looking back in the back there. I see two of my coworkers back there. You can tell they male shovels look at, they turning around, looking all around. Now, them the two that calls me they little buddy, you know, I had a proof point to them.
What happens with the joking? Seems like a lot of the jokes that I've heard, or I don't think I've been told them because they didn't tell them in my presence, but they are not necessarily complimentary to women. You run into that?
Yeah, a lot.
How do you deal with it?
Well, it all depends. It's really, for one thing, about, you know, if somebody walk up to you and say a joke, you got to really have a good attitude, because you don't, you really can get mad. So what I do, I joke right along with him and, you know, tip my hat. I wear a hat, so I tip my hat to him and walk on away, you know. That's the only way I deal with it, because stand up there and really listen at some of the, well, we get truck drivers coming all over the world. You can't believe some of the stuff they say to me. I mean, you really can't believe. If I was to tell you something, you know, you wouldn't believe yourself. So I just look at them, tip my hat, smile at them, go on by my business, you know. You can't really try to tell one of them nothing. You just have to show them. So he says something smart to me about, I can't do this and can't do that. While we loading his truck, what I do, I go do it just to prove a point to him. When we get through loading the truck, this truck ain't going to weigh out. It's going to be overweighted. I say, sir, it's your mind. Will you get on the scales? And I guarantee your truck is A-OK. He get on the scales. He look back. Boy, you ought to see him. The truck be A-OK.
Do you ever have problems, Ms. Baxley? Or if they're your crews, are they polite to you?
No, they're very polite to me, really. And all the timber men are. Mm-hmm.
That's good. I think it really depends on how you handle it. One of the things I mentioned yesterday was it's critically important when you're a minority working with in a non-traditional field to maintain a sense of humor. Because if you don't, you can either get phenomenally frustrated or you can make yourself the butt of every joke and every nasty crack that goes on. And either you do as Barbara does and just, you know, tip your hat and walk on by, or you just let them know from your actions that you're not interested in it. And there's a lot of controversy about whether female people are supposed to be called women or ladies or girls. And,
yeah. That's true.
There's a whole group of men or boys or males out there that you just sort of have to maintain a sense of humor and figure out how you're going to react. There are some men out there that no matter what you do or what you say, they're always going to consider you girls and incapable and incompetent of doing anything, and you just sort of tip your hat and walk on by. And there are others that you know that if you prove to them that you can do it and you do your job, they'll respect you, and you have a choice of either getting in on the jokes with them and being one of the guys and having them tell at least as dirty jokes or dirtier jokes when you're present, or having them have the kind of respect for you that Mrs. Baxley's crews have for her, that they would never dare tell a story like that when you were around because they know you're a lady, yeah, as well as being a woman. And so you have to decide what your role is going to be.
That's true. You must have met that male showman to start on our job now.
Well, I think with the male chauvinists, when if they, after however many years you've been working with them, you haven't gone anywhere, just give up on them. They aren't worth wasting your energy on.
Oh, he is a challenge to me. Every morning I go to work, I have to challenge him. I mean, my day won't be completed. Let's not just really go at him.
We might be.
You just have to make sure you don't sink to their level.
That's what I'm saying, you know. If he makes me mad, he got hold to me. But I make him so mad, you ought to see him. Oh, man. That Dwight, he's a good guy. Dwight do his job well. Now, don't let, you know, I'm not putting the man down or nothing. He just come up to you. He don't never say, Bobby, I'm Bravo. He just say, girl, come here, you know. He just love that girl stuff. He really trips me out.
Does anybody out there have a question that they'd like to ask of any of our participants? Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. I think we all need to look in our own backyard before we start criticizing other places, because I've been told that we're doing more to deforest Florida faster than Brazil's being deforested, which is something that's of concern to all of us. We need to make sure that landowners in Florida, when they harvest, and we need to harvest to keep the economy going and to have all sorts of products that we want, but we need to be reassured that those forests will be replanted. In Florida, that's not a problem at all, because we're now growing the fourth forest that we've had in this state. So once the trees are harvested, we need to make sure that the land is being managed and replanted, and we need to have concern over urban development, which is taking land away from the forest. But in a lot of countries, such as in Brazil, where the ecosystems are so fragile and so diverse, we need to do what we can to help the people there, whether it be the government or the individual organizations that are working there, to learn and to come to realize how fragile their environment is. Because once those forests are cut down, they're pretty much gone forever, because the soil is very thin and very poor. And when the forest is taken down, it opens the area to erosion and total destruction of the soil. And that not only destroys the forest and the diversity of plants and wildlife, but it destroys the economic base on which those people live and survive. It's a very tricky situation, but we in America also have to realize it's easy to say These people should be conserving their land, but when they're worrying about putting food in their children's mouths, maybe cutting down the forest is something that is more important to them than conserving it so we can go down as tourists and look at the butterflies and birds. It's not an easy situation. I think we all need to learn to think of the whole global situation and how we fit into it and how we can make it a better world all the way around and not just be concerned with our own backyard.
Anybody else with a question?
Yes, I do. I suspect in fact, I'm quite sure in a lot of schools and in a lot of states and in a lot of jobs that may not be true, but we have a very enlightened administrator at the University of Florida. My department chairman, the director of the School of Forest Resources and Conservation, and the dean, who are my superiors, know that I'm a part of the team. I do equal work, and I get equal pay.
How about you, Barbara?
Yes, I get paid more than the men's.
Because she's the supervisor.
She's the supervisor.
Say what?
No,
I'm the only one. I supervise the whole plant.
And your pay, the pay scales for female supervisors would be the same as for male supervisors in other plants?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, other plants might have a different pay rate than we does, but just say we get another supervisor, a male, out of my job, yeah, he'll get the same thing I get.
If he can do what you do.
Yeah, if he can handle it.
All right. On that note, I will thank the women who have joined me this afternoon. We'll take a break and have some music here in a few minutes.